Caleb Parsons is 6'9 swing man. You can shoot the 3.
Urban Meyer, a liar. Don't believe a word he said.
Look at you go. Look at that. It's like seeing a kid ride a bike.
And I'm going to law school, baby. It all starts here.
Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Wednesday, July 8th, 2009. I'm your host, Adam Berry, and joining me today is a man whose desire to play tennis was sparked by Roddick Federer, like a young Adam Berry's desire to play hockey was sparked by D2, the Mighty Ducks.
Absolutely. I was out there this afternoon. I won a little 8-2 tennis action with my friend Andrew. So getting back in it. It may be another 3 months before I play again, but I'm going to try and stick with it.
So that was a long-term thing, at least through the week. Because, like I said, when it was all about hockey after seeing the Mighty Ducks movies, that lasted about the week through the weekend, and then it was like, let's just play basketball. Alright, we got a lot to talk about on today's show. A huge show, despite the fact that it's the beginning of July here at UF. We're going to talk about a column written by Paul Feinbaum about Urban Meyer. I guess it's about Urban Meyer. Really, it seems to be about Paul Feinbaum's pent-up frustration at the University of Florida athletic program.
You might say that.
We're going to talk about Riley Cooper, some rumors surrounding his future here at UF or in the pros, a little bit about the BCS and some of the latest developments in Congress, and then we're going to take a break. Come back, talk about our top 10 UF athletes of 2008 and 2009. Break down the first four, which you could have seen in the paper or online at alligatorsports.org over the last couple of days. Maybe preview the next couple that we're going to have coming up. And then we'll come back and give out our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. But let's start off with this Paul Feinbaum column. I saw it online today around 4:30, and I said if we had done this podcast at 5, we're recording closer to 8:30, Tuesday night. If we had done this at 5, I probably would have just tore the microphone up. I would have just ate the microphone. I would have been yelling so much. Because it's a ridiculous concept. First of all, it was teased as, is Urban Meyer on his way out? How much longer does Urban Meyer have coaching at Florida? In reality, he did no reporting on this. So it seems. Am I right? I'm right on that, right, Phil?
Yeah, he certainly does not quote anyone in this story.
Yeah. And mostly he's just talking about the fact that he thinks Meyer is on his way out, is a liar, which, despite the fact that there's a joke about that in our opening theme, I don't think we think Meyer lies about everything he says. I don't know, I didn't cover the tape.
It's really interesting because it's hard. It's going to seem like we're apologizing for Meyer or defending him, but, really it's just like Paul Feinbaum just went way, just past the line here, I wouldn't say we're huge Meyer fans even, and he does some things and we're like, we don't obviously disagree, and there is things he says and we will say you are lying right now to us. But that's far different than the column that we're about to discuss here.
Yeah, alright, and I've got the column in front of me. I printed it out and went through the highlighter. That's how up on this I was when I first read it. The first sentence in the entire thing is it too early for President Obama to place FEMA on red alert for Gainesville? That, to me, first of all, that's absurd, because it's like, you can tell he's about to start stirring some stuff.
Yeah, I actually caught it, our own Mike McCall posted a link on Facebook, and I actually only grabbed, the first couple graphs for a while. I saw it was, stirring the pot, but I just didn't even want to deal with it. I was like, this is just stupid. I was like, I know I'll read it later in the day, and then I came back to it and read the rest of it. But, I'm excited to hear Adam go here, because he promised possibly a yell on this show, so I don't know if we'll get that much, but he's passionate here.
Had we done it at 5, I would have yelled. I might have stood up and screamed at some point, but I've mellowed out since then. I've cooled down. But anyway, the first sentence of the next paragraph is, Urban Meyer is probably leaving Florida after the season to go to Notre Dame. Has anybody confirmed that at all? It's rumored and everything is rumored, but he says it as fact, is probably leaving. And, I like that he says the probably as well, just in case he's wrong. But, he makes this bold stand and he's like, but just in case, he's probably leaving.
Well, right, it's funny, when you read a statement like that, especially with, no lead-in, X said or Y said, I assume then that it's going to be like a spoof or a joke or because you can take these Urban Meyer rumors, they fly all about, you can make good time with them. They're just really ridiculous. And maybe he might go, and you can, even if you would have drawn all the reasons he might go, that's still a lot different than what follows this column saying he's probably leaving after the season.
And, as we know before, earlier on in the summer, Meyer said he had no interest in any other jobs.
Right. I mean, that's definitely not I mean, I wouldn't be shocked if he ends up there. I think I'm on record for saying that I believe he would go to Notre Dame before he would go to the NFL. We had a little debate going on. But it's still like, yeah, he's not come out and said, and even if you think, like, you just different wording, and you definitely have to back it up and go about it a completely different way.
Yeah, anyway, so Feinbaum, you know, goes on to say that Meyer has described the UF coaching job as his dream job. And then he says this, "So how do I know Meyer is not telling the truth? Easy. Meyer's lips moved when he denied the story." Like, when we're here on this podcast and we make the joke about everything Urban Meyer says is a lie, it's easier to tell where we're coming from because, you know, you can hear it in our voice and everything. When you read this, you're out and out accusing the man of lying about everything he says, including this, which is a judgment that if you work for a newspaper in Alabama and don't follow the U.S. football team, you know, every day of the season, you know, every game, even every week, you are not set to make this judgment, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, it certainly made me chuckle. The thing is, it's like, all of these statements, in a sense, by themselves, backed up properly, like, it's not the issue.
Yeah.
It's like, when he says that, I assume the next part is going to be about why he's a liar, or specific intentions of him lying, but as Adam will point out, that is not what comes next.
No, not at all. He goes into basically making character judgments, really, once again, unsourced and everything, and, you know, he didn't even pull the usual, you know, sources say, or I've talked to people who say this, or he does the generic they say, the very, very, very generic they in the sentence where he says they say he was just a normal guy out in Utah. The next sentence, by the way, is one of my favorite. Maybe he was even a decent cat for about 24 hours in Gainesville. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just very, like, you're going soft because you know you're calling someone out, but yet then you turn around and, like, say every time Sliss moves, he's a liar.
Yeah. This one is great to me, though. Since then, Meyer has become obsessed with success and power. Aren't all coaches, just in general, aren't all coaches obsessed with becoming better? You think of the pro coaches, John Gruden, you know, who's, they say he slept in his office and, you know, he'd stay in there till 3 and sleep on his couch and wake up and, you know, go to work the next day. All the great coaches are like this. Am I wrong? It's like...
Yeah, no, I mean, it's all, like, I wouldn't even say that's as far, like, he's saying it as, like, a criticism. A lot of people, if you make that statement, would not even find it a criticism. I mean, almost every SEC coach, at least the good ones, the Les Miles, the Nick Saban, the Mark Richt, I mean, you might consider them obsessed with success and power, but, like, he's obviously putting a negative connotation, since in parentheses he's using the example of the Shane Matthews incident and Urban Meyer saying how former Gators supported for him, which I do believe he went a little way past the line. I feel like every former athlete has to support the school, etc., especially when they're working a commentary gig. But that still, it doesn't even matter. Like, he did do that. That was wrong. Okay. But being obsessed with success and power, while possibly a character flaw, is a character flaw, you know, that a lot of people have, not just college football coaches.
Yeah, that's true. I'm glad you mentioned Nick Saban, though, because Feinbaum goes on to talk about him quite a bit, including that Meyer knows he dodged a bullet in the fourth quarter of the SEC title game last year, which I don't know how much he did in, you know,
no,
that
I mean,
context.
I thought it was a good game. I don't know about dodging a bullet.
Yeah, but he's talking about that. He's saying that Florida's reign of terror, that's a quote, by the way, and the SEC will be over once Tebow is gone, which I don't necessarily think is the inherent truth. Like, I don't know, I think he's sort of just making these bizarre judgments about, well, Tebow's gone, the program leaves with him, when, you know, we know that even though Nick Saban has done some very good recruiting as well, Meyer has also brought in some pretty good classes recently, and, you know, after Tebow. But he's going on, he's saying that won't be enough for the that wasn't enough for the self-absorbed coach beating Saban in the SEC championship game. He needed to beat him a second time. And then he goes into this weird thing about how Meyer was definitely talking to the Utah coaches before the Sugar Bowl, about, you know, how they were going to beat Alabama. I didn't think that was, like, this terrible, like, oh God, like, alert the presses, like, a coach is talking to his friends at this point, you know, about strategy. Like, don't a lot of coaches do that? Wouldn't you
think?
Right,
yeah, like, that... Like, I don't know if that was to be true. I have not, like, Urban Meyer's not said specifically that he talked to Kyle Whittingham.
And Feinbaum certainly didn't prove that he did either.
Yeah, I mean, maybe he has sources that said that. But even if that fact alone is true, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Like, coaches talk to other coaches all the time. Like, I mean, I guess his indictment is the fact that Meyer is talking to Utah about beating a fellow SEC school. But, I mean, first of all, he's from there.
Yeah.
There's friends, there's coaches. Like, I don't really think he would cross the line even if he didn't do, you know, what Feinbaum said he did.
Yeah, it's like when you think even Billy Donovan would talk to Rick Pitino, or Rick Pitino and Billy
Absolutely.
Donovan would talk. That's, you know, it's sort of good old boys club in that sense. You know, that's just sort of how it works. But Feinbaum also asserts that he thought Meyer probably enjoyed Saban, his rival Saban, which I mean, you know, everybody's rivals in the SEC or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't picture Nick Saban and Urban Meyer as these two great titans opposed to each other. I tend to, for some reason, think of Les Miles even more as a rival. Or Mark Richt, obviously.
I mean, yeah, I would say they're just all rivals. I mean, I don't know if there's any more specific hatred,
yeah,
you know.
In general, but anyway, Feinbaum said that he figured Meyer enjoyed the beating of his rival Saban as much as he enjoyed his second national title, which is absurd, that's a joke. Like, oh yeah, I'm glad Utah, where I used to work, could beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl, rather than, you know, I'm Urban Meyer, I just won my second national championship in 3 years, people were just throwing money my way. But you know what, I'm glad Nick Saban lost. No, no, like, that's absurd. The whole thing bothers me. But he goes on, and he's talking about, you know, had Meyer spent less time, you know, conspiring against Alabama, clearly, which is what this whole thing is a conspiracy against Alabama. He would have done a better job, and Florida wouldn't be, quote, teetering on being completely out of control right now. This is continuing on. In case you don't own a police blotter or have the DVD collection of the television series Cops, the Gators recently celebrated their 24th arrest since Meyer's arrival. We've talked about the arrests. The 24 arrests and everything, and we've admitted, it is bad. It looks bad for the program. Meyer needs to have a firmer grasp on this everything. But when you use words like teetering on being completely out of control, you're going over the line. You're stepping over the line. And, you know, you make the cops jokes. Maybe, like, the day the 24th arrest was made and everybody was like, oh no, this is starting to get serious. Norris Jenkins got tased. Maybe that's, like, a little bit funny. You chuckle at that. 2-3 weeks after the point, it's like, do you really have no other point to make here than you think he's a bad disciplinarian?
Yeah, dude, it's just like, this column's just segueing a million different ways.
Poorly.
It's just another diamond on Meyer saying he can't control his program. Out of control, I mean, I'm here on campus, and I don't really feel like he's out of control. I mean, it's summer, they're just practicing. People are writing negative things every once in a while, but, like, that always happens.
Yeah.
Like, I don't... Out of control, like, it would have to be, like, multiple incidents, bad things happening.
Yeah. Legitimate, like, you know, people being thrown in jail. Like, the Carl Johnson stuff had been true, maybe, if Jenkins had, been prosecuted a little more heavily, maybe. But as it is now, like, I don't think completely out of control is quite the way I would describe it, you know. Maybe a little, unchecked at times, I suppose, but certainly not teetering on being completely out of control. But anyway, he goes on, he's talking about how Bernie Mackin wants to pay Meyer more, which is absurd to Mr. Feinbaum, and he makes this connection that the University Athletic Association, University of Florida, apparently operate from the same budget, which is incorrect, as we know. The UAA and UF have separate budgets, so, you know, Meyer getting a contract extension does not play that big of a, you know, does not play into the fact that UF cut $40 million from his general budget. Goes on, and then he uses this strange string of adjectives to describe Meyer. Describes him as arrogant, which I think we would agree is true.
Yeah.
Cold-blooded. He recruits like a serial killer. And then he says, but he's not stupid. The serial killer thing. I mean, you know, you can say what you want to about how a guy recruits, and all, you know, all coaches in the SEC recruit very competitively. When you throw words around like serial killer, you gotta kind of watch yourself. It's like when whenever a columnist gets called out for bringing up the Nazi comparison, that to me is sort of where he was teetering on that. If you can.
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of those analogies you think you're like, oh, hey, buddy, I just saw this analogy. We're gonna chuckle for 30 seconds, and then I'm gonna toss that and never use that.
Yeah.
Like, it's really not something you want. Probably, I don't want associated with my name. Probably.
Yeah, and speaking of that, though, like, We write columns, we write them for every paper here, which is twice a week during the summer. And we'll both admit that we've had our off days, we've had columns that we haven't been exactly proud of, that even we'll rush them, and maybe we're not entirely happy with what we've written. But I don't think, I mean, you know, that's, I don't know, this is like that, except he was really championing this, and the paper itself was promoting this as some sort of, like, grand piece of journalism about Urban Meyer, which to me is absurd.
Yeah, I mean, that, the whole teasing it the day before thing is pretty ridiculous. I mean, the fact that it seems, anyway, from the website, that as a column appears once a week, so people probably clamor for it on Tuesday mornings. You know, he has his own radio network. I mean, he's a guy who is, like, kind of well-known around SEC circles. You know, people at least know him. Like, he has his opinions. You know, you don't always agree with them, but he's definitely, like, a personality in the journalism, you know, SEC area. But, I mean, it just, it goes into the Billy Donovan, he hates on Billy Donovan some, and then it ends with Florida could beat Tennessee by 50 if Meyer can get all of his starters out on parole, which it will just crack you up.
Yeah, that's the real zinger, and that's how you know you got a clever closing, when you come back to a joke that didn't work the first time, and you just beat that dead horse a little bit more. Just, that dead horse is into the ground at this point, you've been with a shovel so many times. That's the end of it. You got the end of it. It's ridiculous. The random insult to Billy Donovan is just, like, completely out of left field to me. He starts with Billy who? And I was like, whoa, like, you know, you remember Billy Donovan. We'll all admit that he hasn't, you know, he certainly hasn't had a good last couple of years. We've even talked about him here as being potentially on the hot seat if the program's struggling keeps up. But it's not like everybody's forgotten who Billy Donovan is, as Mr. Feinbaum asserts in this piece of journalism.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, I think there was a slight bit of exaggeration or humor or sarcasm for there, you know.
I wouldn't call it humor.
I mean,
he was trying.
A little bit. I mean, he's just trying to draw the comparison, which actually might, I wouldn't go far to say it was a good comparison, but might have been the best comparison he made in the whole piece.
Yeah.
Because it is interesting when you look at the career path of Billy Donovan, who was the guy in the moonlight, you know, everybody's looking at him. He can have any job he wants, get paid as much as he wants, goes to the Magic, then doesn't, and now, like, really doesn't have the same limelight he did, and he's comparing that to Meyer, or how Meyer could be if he wins another title, and Florida drops off, which, saying Florida will drop off, I mean, that's your opinion, that's not a big deal, I kind of actually agree, but, like, so that comparison between, like, Meyer might go down the path Donovan went, is actually interesting. Of course, it would be better if you talked to either of them.
Yeah, or had talked to anybody.
Yeah, that's actually an interesting comparison,
I would be
but it's all the way down here at the bottom.
Yeah, I'd be more interested in reading about that, you know, and those potential similarities, you know, maybe if Meyer had talked to Donovan about how to, you know, keep a program up, or, you know, how not to lose control of a program, perhaps, after you win two national championships in a short amount of time. And it is interesting that, you know, much like Billy Donovan might look back on not taking the Magic job, maybe Meyer will in the future, if he doesn't take the Notre Dame job, look back on that. Maybe that'll influence whether or not Meyer will take the job. Do you think he is going to take it soon, though? You think Meyer would be more...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I really don't have a specific year in mind. I don't know if Charlie Weiss does bad this year and Notre Dame's looking for a coach. I don't know if Meyer's ready to go after this year. I mean, obviously it would be some kind of, like, symbolic send-off with him and Tebow leaving, but I think he probably wants to stay a little bit longer. I think what happens is either Weiss makes it through the season and a couple more, like, gets an extension, does fine. Some people say Notre Dame might make a BCS bowl this year, just if you look at their schedule and them getting better.
Yeah.
The Fighting Irish. But I think if either Weiss stays a couple more years, not a couple, I should say a few, you know, 3-4 years, or if Weiss is fired after next season and they get another coach, and then Meyer is, like, the guy after him, so if he's two coaches down the line.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I definitely see, and going back to what I had said, like, I definitely see Meyer going to Notre Dame before he goes to the NFL.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I think the Notre Dame job is something that's interesting to Meyer. I think that he's going to leave after this season is absurd, especially when you look at a team that's favored to win a national championship. Probably will. You know, I think they're, what, 2-1 odds at this point to win,
which is ridiculous.
Which is absurd. But, yeah, I think just saying that he's going to leave, I think Meyer maybe will be a little bit motivated to win without Tebow. You said it would be symbolic for him to leave with him. I think he would be fairly motivated to prove he can win without him.
A little, unless being the cunning guy he is. I mean, there's going to be a drop-off. What the drop-off is obviously the big debate. You know, like, yeah, so you think, like, from an ego standpoint, he wants to show he could win without Tebow, like Kobe wanted to win, he could win with...
Well, I mean,
Kobe wanted to show he could win without Shaq.
Yeah. Well, I mean, clearly, as Mr. Feinbaum has asserted, he is obsessed with success and power. So maybe he wants to prove that he's the man in charge. He's the reason for Florida's success. not the Golden Boy Tim Tebow.
That's interesting. I mean, that's certainly a valid point. I think he might realize that Tebow is a pretty big one. And it's like you're also losing, I mean, not just him, you're losing Brandon Spikes for sure. You know, I don't think, I don't know if his ego's really, can he win without Tebow? I mean, maybe he feels that way. But, I mean, there's a chance. Is there a chance if he wins and then he goes to Notre Dame and Weiss is fired? I mean, it's possible. I just think he will have been here, what, 5 years? Came in 05. I mean, that is a decently long time in this landscape. And my thing is, though, like, if he doesn't go after this year, which is actually going kind of against him, but, like, if he doesn't go this year, he's almost got to wait another era, kind of, because you're not going to win if he does win or he doesn't win. They'll be probably very successful, we can say, at the least.
Yeah.
So they're very successful in 09. Tebow leaves. John Brantley era is 2010, 2011, you know. If he doesn't, if they drop off in 2010, like some say they will, he's not going to leave then.
Yeah.
You know? So, and then it's, do they win in 2011 with John Brantley and then he leaves? Or maybe they have a 2-year drop off and then Meyer, as Feinbaum makes a comparison to Donovan, then Meyer's no longer this cunning young coach that everybody wants.
He's not the hot commodity as much as he would be. Where, you know, you can make the same comparison to Donovan after those national championships. He was, you know, lauded as one of the best coaches in college basketball, winning. Maybe in reality he just had a couple good recruiting classes. One particularly good recruiting class.
Right. I mean, that's always kind of what people like to do, is just kind of like overreact to the moment. Like, that's the best tennis match. That, I mean, I have to make a side note. There was a poll on ESPN after this year's Wimbledon final, which I love this year's Wimbledon final. Watched about from the fourth set on. Okay. In no way is the 2009 Wimbledon final better than the 2008 Wimbledon final. And 2009 won like 63% when I was on ESPN.com.
Because it just happened.
That's just why I thought of it. But anyway, moving back to the point, I mean, yeah, like, if you think about Donovan now, like, he's obviously, like, he was a candidate for that Kentucky gig when it opened, you know, supposedly, rumoredly, you know, whatever. But he's no longer, like, on the short list of all these big market jobs the way he was a couple years ago.
In the way that Meyer is now.
Right,
precisely. National championships. See, I don't really know what to make of this. I don't think Meyer's going to leave after this year. I think he's going to stick around for the reasons we have said. You know, he's going to want to, you know, maybe you don't leave after this, or, you know, and you wait, you build up a program for a little while, and then you leave once again, maybe when your name's still high up on the list out there. But let's move on from that before I just rip the column in front of me to shreds. Let me go back on 1 second real quick. This, to me, like, this is what McCall says. You mentioned he posted it on Facebook, and he said, like, you know, how poorly this speaks for the newspaper that it was running, the Mobile Press Register. Like, did nobody edit this? Did nobody look at this and think, gosh, like, you know, you didn't really source anybody. You didn't really give any reason to write this. No, you know, didn't really check any facts on this, anything. No, I mean, you can take some liberties with columns, but some of the liberties he takes in this are absurd, and it just, like, makes me concerned for the Mobile Press Register, if anything. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously said, we're going to jump on Paul Feinbaum's back and try. I mean, obviously, I'm sure it was kind of a situation where it was just, this is his column, his opinion, and, you know, he's probably run columns in there for years. I think he's been a columnist there for almost 20 years or something. I mean, he's certainly not new to the game by any stretch, you know,
absolutely.
Like, you'll see him at SEC Media Days. You'll see him at some different things. And, like, it's not absurd for him to write about SEC topics as a whole, either. I know that we do that some here. Some newspapers, you know, will stay focused more to their local things. But a lot of Alabama papers, specifically because the SEC's headquarters is in Birmingham.
Yeah.
So it's just like the Birmingham News will cover, like, every SEC event.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not even ludicrous to me that he would write an SEC column or even an Urban Meyer column. But, yeah, the lack of sources, or at least sources shown, quoted, etc., and just the far leap, and, like, each of the leaps would make a stir, and then it's like you just put them all together into one big pot.
Yeah, which is absurd. But, I mean, it worked. He got us talking about it. At least he made it on ESPN. He was, you know, on the, you know, posting online on ESPN.com. So maybe it worked. Maybe we just need to write some absurd stuff and make ridiculous leaps of logic, you know, about a subject that we're not you know, intimately familiar with, and maybe we'll make it big.
People would say that I do that in daily life, but I prefer not to do that in my printed edition.
Alright, well, let's move on. We'll talk about another topic related to the football team here. Riley Cooper was drafted in the 25th round of the MLB draft a couple weeks back by the Texas Rangers, and right now there's some serious talk going on. Ben Volen of the Palm Beach Post reported that he is in serious negotiations with the Texas Rangers. He's out there in Texas playing in some independent leagues, which are very close by to where I believe the Rangers AA organization is. So he's garnering interest. I believe his father said that he's going to negotiate with the team right up to that August 17th deadline, which obviously does not work very well for his playing here at the University of Florida football team, because 2 days start the first week of August. What do you think of this whole situation?
Yeah, I'd say if you're going to take out anything out of this story, I'm not really surprised that he's in negotiation with the Rangers. I mean, he probably was in some sort of negotiations with the Phillies when they took him in the 2006 draft.
Yeah.
It's not surprising. Like, he's still touted as this big baseball prospect. I think it's still a lot big case of, like, potential more than really being shown, because he's played a little bit of baseball at UF, not anything grand. Football, you know, he's played well, and then in spurts has made some big catches.
Yeah.
I would be surprised, I guess, if he goes now, especially since he's being drafted down in the 25th round. That's obviously going to hurt what kind of leveraging for negotiations on what kind of signing bonus he's going to get, unless he thinks that it's not going to be able to get back up, you know, unless he doesn't think he's going to be able to improve that stock and he just wants to start playing baseball. But, yeah, if there was one huge thing that I really take out of this story, it's that, you know, that they plan to have him negotiating all the way to August.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, you know, I haven't spoken to Urban Meyer, but I can't believe that he would like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if Riley, you know, Cooper leaves and comes to 2 days, but is still negotiating with a major league team, I mean, that could be a major thing. Not necessarily that he's, like, irreplaceable, but it would just be a major focus. Like, you know, if in the middle of 2 days or the end of 2 days, Riley Cooper leaves the team to go play Major League Baseball, that's just a lot of news not about football that Urban's not usually a fan of.
A lot of drama he's probably not going to want to have surrounding his team. Additional drama as a coach is never something you want to pull in.
Exactly.
But to back up a couple of things you said he struggled a little bit at UF baseball. Last year he had a knee injury, but he batted .247, two home runs, and of course 41 strikeouts and 98 plate appearances. I remember Kyle back during baseball season was looking out for that 50% strikeout at-bat, or to plate appearances, which he, you know, just about 40%, not bad. But yeah, the other thing you said, signing bonus, he is reportedly one of the few Rangers draft picks negotiating what Ben Volen described as a big bucks signing bonus. I would assume that would mean, you know, larger than you would expect for maybe a 25th round pick, but the salary would be low six figures, he reported, much like what Mike Mooney got with the Orioles, which the signing of which I have still not fully wrapped my head around, by the way. But yeah, how do you think this is going to affect the team? Do you think he's going to do it?
There seems to definitely be an understanding between Meyer and the Cooper family. As we've seen, last summer he was out playing independent, you know, minor league-esque baseball. In the spring, he didn't go to spring practice, he was playing baseball. So it seems like Urban Meyer is very allowing. Like, when Riley Cooper came here, I'm sure there was some sort of understanding by Meyer, you know, saying, obviously, you know, your kid's this big baseball talent, like, okay, I'll let him do things, you know, that maybe not everyone else does. And he did. He was selected, you know, by the Phillies, as we said, in the 15th round coming out of high school.
Yeah.
And had big potential. He was, you know, Baseball America loved him. Rivals loved him. He was, like, this big, like, he had this baseball body, per se, if such thing exists, I guess. But, I don't think Urban's probably not going to really say anything about it, but I'm sure behind the scenes he's probably going to be like, you know, like, what's the deal here? You know, like, I would be shocked if Urban lets this story carry through to 2 days, and in the middle of 2 days we're still asking Urban what's going on with Riley Cooper. Now, Riley has had a lot of leeway. You know, he's been hurt, he's been playing baseball, he's been playing baseball over the summer and the spring, you know, just making it work. But as I said, I'd just be really shocked if, you know, the 2 days were still, there's Riley Cooper, there's not today, you know,
yeah.
I don't know.
I think it's bizarre enough, you know, in terms of how this football team generally works, that he's not here for summer workouts. Like, you'd think that would be pretty rough on a coaching staff in terms of not having somebody who's supposed to be a starter next year, you know, just gone the entire summer and not working out with the rest of the team. But Cooper's father said the fact that his son is supposed to be a starter for the football team will not factor into his decision to leave or return. I don't particularly know what that means exactly. I feel like, you know, it's basically, would he play football or not? Because if you're a receiver on this team, you're going to see some pretty substantial time. I don't know if the starter role necessarily means.
Right. Well, I mean, to me, that just kind of points out that, like, his possibility of a football career is not, like, that's not the main factor in deciding what he's going to do with baseball. It's more probably a money thing, and if he thinks he can be drafted higher a year from now. I don't think, obviously what he's saying is, like, I would be surprised, obviously, if Riley Cooper doesn't go pro, he's going to come back and play football. But I don't, like, him, the fact that he would have to give up football, it seems like, from that statement, is low down on Riley's priority list.
All right, and the other thing he says is that he does not know how much Cooper has been in contact with Meyer. So, really, we don't know how much, you know, nobody knows how much he's run this by Meyer. And he could have run it by him a lot, and Meyer could be okaying all this, or, you know,
right.
He could just be doing this under the table.
I wouldn't necessarily read too much into that. I mean, it's kind of like the father doesn't want to, like, get, it's almost one of those, like, you don't want to get in trouble saying something,
yeah.
You know. Like, I'm sure Urban at least obviously knows about it, is in touch with them. I wouldn't make it out to be like Riley's, like, doing this around Urban or anything
like
that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Anything else about the Riley Cooper thing? What do you think he has a brighter future?
I think it's pretty clearly baseball.
Yeah.
I think most people would definitely agree that. The thing is, though, it's just, can he finally meet all of his potential that everyone's, you know, been saying? Because as you say, he had 41 strikeouts and 98 plate appearances. Obviously, you know, that's a swing you gotta fix, you know? But, like, he got a lot of praise. You know, he did well a year ago in the independent leagues, and obviously he's still getting drafted, even though he's doing almost nothing here. So they're really just drafting him. The Rangers literally just drafted him on almost what he was 3 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, just on that potential alone, which is why he dropped down a lot of rounds, 10 rounds to be exact.
Mm.
But, I mean, I think his brighter future is certainly in baseball.
Do you think he would have any NFL potential?
He might get drafted in, like, a really late round, but I don't, I would say, like, I don't know, I mean, he's not as good as Lewis Murphy, and I think Lewis Murphy's going to have difficulty hanging on with teams, you know, year to year in his career.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's, like, a decent possession guy, not great. I mean, the old joke was, for his first couple of years here, is if Riley Cooper's not running the fly, he's not catching the ball. So, obviously, that's not a good reputation to have. He did have some big catches. He came up big in the SEC Championship game, especially.
Yeah.
But, no, I mean, I don't. If he, I couldn't even see why he would go football, because he's either going to go baseball or he gets hurt and he can't go baseball.
Yeah.
I don't see what path would take him to the NFL.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's just, you know, one of those things, you want to be on this team's commitment. You started, maybe you want to finish it out if you're going to stick with. If you're going to come back, that is, you're going to play football just because you're
sure.
Done.
Yeah, I mean, why not, almost?
Yeah.
I mean, like, even just the aura of being a Florida football player, you might win another title.
Yeah.
You are going to be a starter. I mean, it's not really, that would be like a, that's like a no decision.
Yeah.
I mean, like, of course.
I'm glad you brought up the Lewis Murphy thing, though, because that was what I was thinking. Like, he was the, you know, what best receiver? Like, third, fourth best receiver on last year's team?
Yeah, well, and, like, and they're, like, I don't know, speed-wise, how Riley compares with Lewis. Lewis was actually faster than I always realized he was.
Mm.
But just the fact that he was, like, this possession-type guy who would make, you know, some in-routes and not really, you know, Riley can get deep catches, but not always. He's just, like, that guy that, like, his stats never, like, wow you. Is
yeah,
the point.
Yeah, which, like I said, I don't think he has any real NFL future. I think, despite the poor numbers, you know, maybe scouts, maybe coaches can work with him in baseball, and they can improve on those 41 strikeouts.
I mean, yeah, it could be also just the fact that he's splitting between two sports. Like, I mean, obviously there's been examples of professional people, you know, doing them both, but those people are not the norm. You know, like, if you think about it, maybe if Riley goes to 12 months a year baseball, he doesn't take, you know, all the time during the fall to go into football, because you have to think, all those baseball players that he joined this spring were working on baseball through the fall, while Riley, you know, I don't know to what level he did any baseball work, but I'm sure it wasn't much, because you're a football player on a team that's trying for a national title, you're playing all the way through January.
Yeah.
So while he did join the baseball team and he wasn't injured from football season, he still hasn't had all the work that all those other guys have.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And let's move on to our last college football-related topic here. BCS is, of course, an issue in Congress. The latest story I have in front of me here is from the Associated Press, talking about a lawyer for the Mountain West, Barry Brett, raised the possibility of antitrust violations in the BCS during a testimony before a Senate Judiciary Committee subcommittee. Sorry, I didn't know if I was going to be able to handle the legal terms there. He got a favorable reception from Orrin Hatch, senator from Utah. Surprise! Utah. Not a big fan of the BCS, imagine that. But Hatch noted that the Sherman Antitrust Act prohibits contracts, combinations, or conspiracies designed to reduce competition. And this, to me, this is my favorite quote in the whole thing. He says, Hatch said, "I don't believe a plainer description of the BCS exists," saying that, prohibits contracts, combinations, or conspiracies designed to reduce competition, therefore saying the BCS reduces competition. What's your input on this?
Right. I mean, like, these type of arguments have been around for a couple of years. This certainly isn't the first time the whole BCS Congress debate is coming up. I mean, it is interesting. Orrin Hatch, while he is from Utah, is also someone who has a decent amount of clout on the Hill. You know, he's the most senior Republican in the Senate. Like, he's someone who is respected.
Yeah.
But it's just, I've gone really full circle on this topic. Because, like, while I think that the BCS isn't going to change without someone making a change, there's just no reason to. It's so money-based and everything. I don't really think that Congress should look into this deeply. I think certainly, like the millions of people, but a lot of people that have expressed opinions that the Congress has better things to do with their time. I mean, there's a lot more issues in America, especially now these days, economy, multiple wars, than trying to deal with the BCS. And I understand all this, the Congress has a lot of time and supposed to represent the people, but there's just no reason for this. I mean, but he is really putting on the full court press. In this week's Sports Illustrated, maybe last week's issue, Hatch had an open letter, an op-ed piece, laying out the case for why this should happen and how the Mountain West Conference got screwed. And obviously, being from Utah, he's trying to get reelected. I mean, it's not even like a ploy. Like, I think he might actually believe this. But your job, technically, as some people view it, as a senator from Utah, is to represent the people of Utah.
Yeah.
And what better way to do that after you're a football team in your state that went undefeated, got no respect, than to raise this point?
Yeah, that's a very good point. The opposing point was brought by Harvey Perlman, who's the chancellor of the University of Nebraska. He said the BCS simply recognizes that the public wants to watch the powerhouse college football teams. The article says such as his. I don't personally view Nebraska to be much of a powerhouse anymore. Apparently, Mr. Perlman was coming from 1995 when he made this statement.
Yeah.
Perlman is the new chairman of the BCS Presidential Oversight Committee. So those two opposing viewpoints, they're always going to be battling each other. I think for the most part, we're banging our head up against the wall with these debates. I don't think anything's going to change, that radically, unless Obama himself really steps off the pedestal and makes this decision.
Well, right, that's kind of the distinction I want to make, too. It's like, I want to point out, I had no problem when asked with Obama saying he would prefer a playoff. Mm-hmm. They had those interviews during the primaries, he was on Monday Night Football, him and John McCain. Like, it wasn't as if Obama, a little soapbox here, but it wasn't like Obama came out and said, I'm going to push for a college, he didn't do it without being questioned, and it's not like it's jumped on his agenda above healthcare, the economy, and, all the other issues in the United States. So, I find it funny when people are like, well, I don't really think the president should have an opinion on this. That's ridiculous. He's going to have an opinion. He's one of the most sports knowledgeable presidents we've had, so he has an opinion, and he was asked about it, and I really respect him for voicing that opinion. But no, do I think he's going to really, is he going to push for this to happen? No, he might throw a low-level staffer and be like, I kind of wonder what's going on there, but it's not like he's going to come out and be like, all right, let's stop the presses, Let's stop fixing, you know, the problems of Detroit, automakers, bank issues. Let's stop. Let's deal with the BCS. I'm going to fix this whole playoff issue.
Yeah.
I don't really see that happening.
Yeah, it's like, I'm sure he, you know, he has an opinion on steroids in baseball, too. But
absolutely.
It's the same thing. He just has an opinion on it. He's mentioned it. It's something that he obviously, like you said, as a fan of sports, as somebody who cares about sports, would like to see. But I think, you know, I think we're kind of wasting our time in the government with this. I don't think anything's going to happen. Like you said, advertising, it's where the money's at. Follow the money, and the money right now is in the BCS system. All right, we're going to move on and talk about our list of top 10 UF athletes of 2008-2009. We've been counting them down 10 to 1. We're on number 7 right now, the ones who have been revealed so far. Number 10, Elise Cusack of the volleyball team. Number 9, Ahmad Black, football team. Number 8, Shea Brooks of the women's basketball team. And number 7, Francesca Anea of the softball team. Let's talk about these four that we've revealed so far. We're gonna, you know, keep doing. I guess next Thursday will be the end of the list. So at that point, we'll talk a little bit more as a whole. People who were left off, we'll talk more about, you know, the list as a whole. But right now, let's talk about these four. How do you feel, you know, that they're related in relation to each other? Do you feel like
right.
This is the correct order?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I would say that. I would guess if anyone has a problem with any of these four, it's probably with Ahmad Black. I would guess a lot of, you know, especially those UF fans that are so football-centric would remember how big of a deal Ahmad Black was, especially that he came out of the blue.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously we try to incorporate that, but, it, you know, as we've spoken before, just comparing everything to everyone in every sport, you know, certainly the case for Elise Cusack, can, like, it's almost a thing where, like, she's taken for granted at some points. I mean, there's even been stories during the volleyball season last fall where it's like, you just kind of assume some of the things Elise Cusack does, and it's almost to the point where, like, you might not realize the impact she has until she's gone.
Mm. All right, well, that's a pretty good point. I think Ahmad Black is the one that most people would probably argue to be higher, like you said, because of the football thing, because most fans care so much about the football team and its accomplishments. But yeah, I'm pretty much all right with the list. I don't know if I would have put Elise Cusack in the top 10 list. I don't know if she would have. I mean, at number 10, obviously, I don't have a problem with it. I thought,
right.
Like you said, we take it for granted, but whereas, you know, when somebody like Kelly Murphy has a breakout season like she did, maybe we tend to overvalue that. So maybe this is correct in that sense, I guess you could say.
Right. I mean, I'll say, as I was writing the Shea Brooks piece for today's paper, the number 8 story, I kind of, a little bit forgotten, or sometimes you're so close to something that you forget actually how good it is. I've actually noticed this concept sometimes just from actually covering the football team day to day last year. Like, people's, like, obviously, like, you realize big moments, you realize Tebow's speech, you realize you're watching offense that's really good, but when you're looking at the minute details and you cover people so day-to-day, you almost lose how good the team was. Like, I've had those conversations where people, like, I almost devalue what happened because I was so close to it.
Yeah, I did that with the softball team, you could say, which hits a little bit more after you.
Yeah, I mean, my point, just like with Shea, because I covered the UF basketball team a year ago, I wrote a column on their big win over Tennessee this year. Like, I knew Shea really well, you know, nice person, good player, you know. But it was like, I was so used to the things she did, I forgot to realize in the context of things how important she was to her team and how actually good of a player, you know, unanimous first team All-SEC selection.
Yeah, like I said, my thing was with the softball team, maybe I was a little bit close. And I didn't rate Francesca Ney, who came in at number 7, as highly as some other people did, but as I was writing that, you know, it all sort of starts to come back to, like, you know, she had 10 RBI in a day. Like,
yeah.
2 grand slams in a day. And you start looking at those numbers again, and you're like, you know, if you compare them individually to other people, like, she slugged the exact same thing as Kelsey Bruder did. You know, the on-base percentage was fairly close with Age Bakuba. But then when you put everything together and you look at it as a whole, you see that she was a complete player, and she did everything as well as anybody else on the team.
Well, right, and the amazing factor, which, like, to me, when I was ready to put her, gave her an extra nod, was the fact that she did all those things where, like, if you take this fact I'm about to say out, she had an amazing season.
Yeah.
She did it all with the torn ACL in the preseason.
Yeah.
Like, and she's played on one before, so, I mean, you could say that, like, she's dealt with it before, but, I mean, at some point, you're still playing without an ACL. You know, it's not like it's easy. I'm sure there's pain.
Yeah.
You know, like, so when you take all those stats and you add in a preseason torn ACL, it just gave her a nod.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's why I was very happy with where she landed, number 7. Maybe Shea Brooks, you could argue, in terms of what she did for her team, you know, maybe she was, I don't know if I'd say she was more important to her team than Francesca Anaya was, because you look at the softball team and you think the most important person to that team was Stacey Nelson.
Right, I don't think there's any argument there.
No, so I mean, it depends if you rate it that way, but to me, like you said, the injury thing and everything, you know, playing on a partially torn ACL all season and putting up the ridiculous numbers that she did, especially at the beginning of the season, that to me justifies her being rated ahead of Shea Brooks. There are some other people who were not on this list at all that we'll be talking about later once the entire list is revealed, that I think should have been on here. Maybe, you know, maybe some of these people should have been bumped off the list for these people. But you know, like I said, we'll save that for another day, another rant. I'm still a little worn out from the fine ball thing.
Yeah, I would say, especially, it's easy. I'll just say this to people that read our list and critique it. I'm not saying we get it all right or any of it right, but that's right. But, like, it's really interesting, like, when we threw around this idea, it was like, oh, yeah, like, you felt like you knew, oh, of course, top 10 athletes, like, this person's top 10 athlete, this person's top 10 athlete, and then I realized I had about 16 top 10 athletes, you know, like, it's really hard sometimes to actually cut it down to 10, like, there's people, absolutely, that I would have liked to have seen on this list that we can talk about after it comes all the way out.
Yeah.
But just cutting it down to 10, it's tougher than it seems.
It is very difficult, and it comes down to a lot of what value and what the people who, you know, all the 6 of us who wrote it on this value and what they know about, you know, maybe some of the smaller sports who had standout athletes whose teams maybe weren't as successful as well. That's the thing that we've noticed. You know, with the football team, we feel like we were, like you said, devaluing the team if we didn't put, you know, several football players on this list because they won a national championship. They were the best team in the country. Like, you know, the same goes for the softball team. So.
Right, yeah, no, absolutely. That's also why, just, you know, for your information, we throw in the little by the numbers thing at the bottom of each story because I think it is interesting, like, what, where we, not necessarily which person, I don't think it's really that important which comments have which person where, but just to show you, like, the wide range sometimes we had in valuing different athletes.
Yeah, absolutely. And then on our next paper Thursday, we will be debuting, or unveiling, I should say, the number 6 and number 5 picks. I believe our tease for number 6 was that this Gator was a spokesperson for the team on and off the field of play. Had one of the most memorable plays of the 2008-2009 sports year. And then number 5, you got that one?
Yeah, had a really great performance. Some people would call this athlete had a record-breaking performance.
I guess all
would say that, yeah.
I would try. People who know the truth would say that.
Try, got to stumble over words. And this athlete lived up to a lot of hype that this person had coming in preseason.
I love how vague these are. We fight so hard not to say he or she.
We work hard on this, don't you worry. Each night, it's a battle.
Yeah. All right, so look forward to those. Next podcast will probably be next week. And I guess at that point, we'll be able to talk about number 6, number 5, and maybe even numbers 4 and number 3. So look forward to that. All right, moving on, we're going to give out our Reggie Nelson Awards for Excellence in the Field of Sport and Kyle Jackson Bad Angles of the Week. I'm going to start off with my Reggie Nelson. I'm going to give it to I guess former Gator now, Stacey Nelson, pitcher. She's playing for Team USA. They're up in the Canada Cup. USA won 8-1 over Venezuela, and Stacey Nelson pitched 2 innings, struck out 3, you know, pretty good performance. And then my favorite thing, she scored a run. Stacey Nelson did not step up to the plate in her entire 40 years at UF. And then she goes up, she hits into a fielder's choice, she gets on base, she gets around to third, and is walked in, and that's, you know, the first run she scored in probably 5 years. So
I thought that was a terrific story when you passed along.
That to me is neat. And then obviously the fact that she's, you know, she's playing for Team USA and doing fairly well, even if it's against Venezuela. I don't know how great a softball team Venezuela's hustling out on the field there. But yeah, she's doing well for herself in international competition. So she gets my Reggie Nelson.
Yeah, my Reggie Nelson, as previously mentioned in this podcast, is going to the men's Wimbledon final. Not the women's. Although that was a decent match here. I didn't catch it though. Saturday. Just Sunday morning just works better than Saturday morning. Roger Federer, Andy Roddick. Great, phenomenal match. As I said, I caught up like the 4th, 5th sets. It was great. I was wondering if they were ever going to end because they just for holding serve so ridiculously well. It's absurd if you think this match is better than the 2008 Wimbledon final, just what? Because, okay, because you had Nadal, like taking over the crown from Federer. Like, this doesn't have all the implications that it had. He never beat him on grass. Wimbledon was going for, Federer was going for his sixth Wimbledon title. Like, there was so much more around that. And
Federer,
if you look at it,
teeth, like, that's kind of a big deal.
I mean, it is, but it was, like, honestly, I wish it would come against Nadal, like, healthy Nadal. Like, I hope he gets better so that this rivalry, like, continues, even though, like, Federer is obviously, like, if you compare him to Nadal will be on the up and Federer will be on the down. But, nonetheless, it's a great tennis match. Got to watch for hours. Distracted me from actually doing work, and that's always a great thing.
Inspired you to play tennis yourself.
I did, yeah. I was really happy. I played, like, once over spring break and once or twice maybe during spring semester. Mike McCall and Mike DiFernando, actually, and I all went out over spring. We played once, said how great it was, and didn't play again, I don't think.
No.
But played once over spring break, not really good. I was decent, at least I took lessons, you know, 10 years ago, so kind of keep it going, I guess.
Yeah. I actually got to say, like, I think I've probably mentioned before on here that I'm not a huge golf guy, not a huge tennis guy. The country club sports don't particularly suit me.
I couldn't guess that.
You could say. But actually, I woke up and I was in Steinhatchee, my home sweet home, for the 4th of July weekend, and my brother and I were sharing a room. It was one of those situations where he's just now getting into The Wire, which could not make me prouder as a brother. And, you know, we watched an episode of that, and we're like, watch Wimbledon. It was like the third or fourth set. We watched that, and watched like the whole thing through, and I was like, this was a thoroughly enjoyable morning. Watch The Wire, watched a great tennis match. This, like, I enjoyed that. Funny thing, actually, because I was in Steinhatchee for the 4th of July during Veteran Adult.
Oh.
I left, and I was in the car at the end of that. And this time I was like, no, I'm seeing this to the very end. I don't care. So
yeah.
I didn't. I was happy.
Gotcha. I mean, especially, like, if you're a casual sports fan, like, yeah, if you're not a tennis fan and all you caught of Wimbledon, you know, because it's the final, like, you did okay. You know, like, because some people, it's like, sometimes you miss things if you only watch on the biggest stage kind of thing. It's like those people that only watch the final four and miss the first thing around the NCAA tournament, they miss out.
Yeah.
You know, but they just Wimbledon again, like, back-to-back years. And thankfully now they have that roof, so they wouldn't have had that darkness issue that we had in 08.
Yeah.
You know. But.
Yeah. All right. Now I'm going to give my Kyle Jackson, no surprise here, Paul Feinbaum. You know, just as a small compliment, I realized when we were looking him up before we did this that he wrote a book that I own as a small child called 303 Reasons Why I Hate Florida State and I Hate Florida State and 303 Reasons Why You Should Too, I guess was the proper title of that. I remember that, like, as a kid, and I was like, oh, these are kind of funny. I'd probably look back now and realize that they're all kind of childish, juvenile jokes, much like the stuff he wrote in his column that we talked about a lot at the beginning of this podcast. But, yeah, I've got to give him to Kyle Jackson just because he wrote that.
Yeah, I've got to go back. This happened probably just soon after we recorded last week's podcast. But 13-year-old Evan Berry, verbally committing to play for the Tennessee Volunteers. He is obviously the brother of star Tennessee safety, Eric Berry, but this absolutely is my Kyle Jackson Award. I didn't even make it very far going through my sports trying to figure out what would be my Kyle Jackson Award.
What's his class, like his recruiting?
He will be the first member of the class of 2013. So he's entering high school.
Yeah.
He's an eighth grader. If it's like a small gesture because you're like throwing it to the brother of the star. I mean, yeah, people say it doesn't mean anything. That still means it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, oddly enough, what this Sports Illustrated story by Andy Staples also pointed out is another eighth grader to receive a scholarship offer that may catch you off guard. Chris Leak.
Really?
As an eighth grader, was offered a scholarship to go to Wake Forest. Wake Forest had just signed Leak's older brother, CJ. But when CJ Leak injured his knee, he transferred to Tennessee. And I guess apparently there was some little thing between CJ and Tennessee, and Chris didn't really like Tennessee as much anymore, and ended up in Florida. So I don't know if she's banked on Evan Berry being a Gator in the recruiting class of 2013.
Anything's possible.
It's just, I mean, why? Like, like, I just really, like, not like I'm some proud parent here going on a soapbox, right? But I'm just so bad for these kids, like, honestly. Hey. Alright, whatever. That can make me sound really old. But, like, I imagine, like, I was not ever going to be an athlete recruited in it. You know, like, I played basketball, I ran track. I just wasn't great. I wasn't going to be a college athlete either. But, like, heaven forbid I was, like, I mean, what I really want to be doing is at 13 years old.
No.
At 13 years old, I was like, all right, I'm over cooties. I'm trying to find girls to go to the 8th grade dance. I'm trying to move on to high school. Like, ooh, I have, you know, like, I don't know, all these things I do. Like, in a couple years, I'm going to drive.
Yeah.
Like, I'm going to get a job. Like, I'm 4 years away from college. But, like, I don't want to be thinking about, like, signing. Because signing as a college athlete, it's, like, the first step, especially if you're going to play pro. It's, like, such a big deal to be possibly thinking about such a decision at the age of 13 is absolutely absurd.
You're forgetting another one of the most absurd things about this is that he's talking about that, you know, committing or whatever. What if he sucks? Like, what if he... I mean,
well,
I know he's related to Eric Berry,
right.
So, you know, Eric Berry's great.
Right.
Once again, no relation. He could just be the last name. But, you know, he's great and everything. But how do we know that, you know, little 13-year-old Evan here is going to be, you know, a star? What position is he? What position is he going to play? Do they have that? If they have that, I'm leaving.
I think he's a running back.
Huh.
I'm pretty sure he's a running back.
He's not done growing. Like,
no, he's totally not. And, like, it's for college football, they, like, live and die by, like, you know, numbers. Like, how can you... But anyway, I gotta read this quote. This is from Evan Berry to Jamie Newberg, a big analyst at Rivals.com.
Yeah.
Yes, I committed to Tennessee, Evan said. It's the only college I know right now, and it seems the best for me. I'm just stop right there. I don't need to read the rest of it. The rest is, it's awesome, I love Tennessee, I know them. It's the only college I know right now. Like, all right, I won't lie, when I was a little kid, I wanted to go to Florida. It's all I thought about. I came to Florida. But I'm not a college athlete. It was the best school in Florida. Like, the absurdity of that. Like, I'm going to go play college athletics. I only know of one college. I only know of one. Yeah, sure, I'll pick that. It must be the best. It's like you've only met one girl in the world, and you're like, oh, she's pretty nice. I haven't met any others, so I can't really compare her, but she's really amazing.
I'm going to marry her. That's what
you're saying. Yeah, I'm going to marry her. I don't need to meet anyone else. Love at first sight. You know what this would be like? If you're 13 years old and you think you've met your wife. For love at first sight. I'm 13. I'm never going to learn anything better. Like, I'm not going to mature. I'm not going to learn anything else about myself, about her, about other people. I'm marrying her.
This is absurd. Like, that. Lane Kiffin, like, could anybody, has any coach that come into a school and just started with a more ridiculous track record up front?
I mean,
I'm sure somebody has, but
they say
any
publicity is good publicity.
So they say, I guess, but, yeah, that's absurd. I don't know what makes me angry in retrospect. Paul Feinbaum or my illegitimate 13-year-old brother signing at Tennessee. It's an angry week here at the Alligator Sports Podcast. But I guess that wraps it up for this show. Stay tuned to our paper and online at alligatorsports.org for number 6 and 5 of the top 10 UF athletes of 2008-2009. Send any feedback you have on this podcast, especially that list. We'll be reading a little bit more feedback. We've already received a little bit. Once the list is completely out, we'll probably devote a special section on the podcast to dealing with that feedback. But yeah, send me feedback, sportsalligator.org, comment on our blogs. Thanks for listening.